Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
In by Kulusevski. That is extraordinary. He has Barnard stolen it back. Melodrama upon melodrama. City thought they had saved it. You are never saved. Face to face with Harry Kane, and Conte has found the way.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and TIFO's producer, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
That's me.
Moonlighting.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm only allowed to say very good and nice things about The Athletic for the duration of the competition. So
that's no fun. Yeah. Oh, Nathan. You've sold out.
Yeah, that's me.
Unbelievable.
I'm doing a favour for a mate as well. Really doing.
You're allowed to do favours for mates. That's fine.
Good money.
You're doing a fantastic job. I hope they're paying you well for your services. I want to start by reading this message from Joe Roberson, one of our ex-subs. I really liked this message. So Joe says, I wanted to shout out to my daughter, Ida, who is 15. She and I watch Spurs online every week. We'd been looking forward to watching Wales and England in the World Cup. Even though we felt unhappy about the difficult issues surrounding its hosting in Qatar, we were up for continuing our tradition of sharing Euros and World Cups together. We'd even prepared a new game of World Cup bingo for this one. Last Monday, we watched Wales' opening game against the USA together. We knew that Bale wouldn't be wearing the One Love armband because of FIFA's threat of player sanctions, i.e. yellow cards, etc. After the game, Ida, and remember that Ida's 15, turned to me and said she didn't want to watch any more of the World Cup. Essentially, she felt let down by FIFA's action on the armband and that it felt right for her to boycott the rest of the matches. I told her I supported her and felt proud of her for making her stand by what she believes in, and the next morning I decided to do the same, in solidarity with her and everyone who feels let down by FIFA. I feel proud and inspired by my daughter and her values and her will. It's a big deal for us to miss the World Cup, but every day since then it has felt like totally the right thing for me to do. So yes, absolutely. Shout out to Ida, who at 15 has shown more moral integrity than FIFA. And well done to Joe for standing by your daughter. That said, we are going to talk about the World Cup, I'm afraid. I kind of feel like we have to some degree, but there's not a great deal that we want to talk about around this England-USA match because it was so drab, so dull. Where do you want to start, Bardi? Did you watch the game?
Yeah, of course. I'm not gonna miss England's big performance on the big stage. It was awful,
so awful.
It was. I mean, it's one of the worst Friday nights I've had in my life. It was that bad. I was really looking forward to it. I was supporting my American brothers. I was hoping. Actually, I got more out of America than I thought I would. They were actually better than I thought. I thought they were going to be terrible, but England were awful, man. It was a really bad game. And the funny thing is, you know, Gary Neville went after Argentina the following night. I thought Argentina was all right. And then he also went after Germany a little bit. Someone went after Germany. I think it was the BBC. And both of those teams showed more kind of attacking intent and attacking inspiration than England managed in 90 minutes. It was a bad game. And I think ultimately that's going to come back and hurt the USA. They should have won that match. Instead, I think they're going to go out this week.
Nathan, pretty much a stalemate. Is that fair to say?
Sure. Don't ask me too many questions about this game. Like most of the World Cup, I'm not boycotting it. It is on my television, but I'm also not really watching it, you know? So I in a way, I could get away with boycotting. I wouldn't be missing anything except that my fiance is interested in watching it a little bit, but I'm so disinterested in this World Cup, and yet I'm not turning it off, you know? It was one of the games I paid the least attention to so far.
I mean, I do think there has been some interesting things in this World Cup. I've enjoyed the bits I've seen. I've enjoyed, like, the Ghana games. Like, today has been a spectacular game of football. It was two brilliant games. It just feels a lot like the older players are letting everybody down. Bales, Kane, Neymar, thankfully, is injured. Ronaldo, they've just not turned up. Messi scored a beautiful goal, but then other than that, he hasn't really done much else. It does feel like a real kind of watershed moment where this is the final bit for a lot of these players. And they'll retire and then the new lot will come in, which I think would be just good for football in general. It's been a bit tiresome, the whole Ronaldo-Messi argument for the last 5 years when they're both nowhere near what they were back in the day.
Yeah, I definitely think most coaches have leant towards an older squad and it's not worked well for them.
Yeah, I mean, you could even point the same towards England as well. Harry Kane is not looking great, but there's the refusal to kind of move out these stalwarts and these legends. And I think with Wales especially, how do you move on from Bale and Ramsey? It's really difficult, but at some point, someone has to make a brave decision, and the players there, they're just not willing to step off the stage. So I think a manager needs to be brave at some point.
Kane has specifically requested to not be rested for the third group game, which is not a surprise at all to any Spurs fans at this stage, right? I mean, I don't think it's ever come out. I don't know if it's ever been like formally reported Kane refuses to be rested, but it's been extremely obvious for those of us who are watching, following the team every week, right? someone take over for me. Where do we go with this?
I mean, I think Kane's getting a bit of stick, a bit too much stick. I don't think England's problems are Harry Kane related. I think there's so much more happening around him which isn't functioning. But it's not helped by the fact that he's just not moving properly. But I do think England's problems are bigger than Kane. Saying that, if I was Southgate, I probably would keep starting him, but I would do things differently elsewhere.
So I thought Kane had a really good game against Iran. Thought he just didn't get found against the USA. They did a good job of sort of screening the passes to him. And my biggest issue was with Mason Mount, who I really like Mount, and he has an incredible work rate, but he was just not having a good game. And I thought the same of Saka. I think Saka's a wonderful player. He was not having a good game. And Southgate instead took off, he took off Sterling and...
Bellingham,
yeah. I'm thinking... Why are you taking off Sterling and Bellingham rather than Mount and Saka, who, in my opinion, were the obvious two to withdraw? And to like, my first sub would have been Foden. He didn't even bring Foden on. So my issue was more with Southgate's refusal to try something new. It was kind of, you know, pretty much did more of the same when things weren't going well. And so the same patterns continued. Kane did have a headed chance, which he absolutely fluffed. But other than that, he had very little service in that game. And I would say I would credit the US as much as I would sort of criticise England for that, because they did a really good job of screening those passes.
Yeah, but that said, Zimmerman is a terrible defender.
Yeah.
He's bad on the ball. He's bad off the ball. He's like Eric Dyer's worst brother. Did you read about Southgate that he doesn't watch TV? He doesn't listen to anything. He just goes back to his hotel room and then just doesn't have anything on because he doesn't want his thoughts to be diluted or messed with by people's opinions, which perhaps he should put on TalkSport at least, or something like that. I think he might get some ideas from TalkSport.
Buddy, we haven't yet spoken about, or certainly not in detail, about the stoppage time situation. How are you feeling about this? So we're seeing some sort of radical added time at the end of both first halves and second halves. Do you think that's a good move?
See, this is a solution to a problem. I don't think it's the correct solution, but I think it's almost like an awareness piece that doesn't matter if you're going to keep wasting time, if you're going to keep making these substitutions with the sole purpose of running down the clock, time is going to get added on. So I think this whole World Cup is like, this is the problem. This is what you're doing, and this is what we're going to do to fix it. So what I'm hoping from this is that teams decide, or they realize that there's no point wasting time anymore, because it's just going to come back on them when they're even more tired. I don't think it's long-term term, it's the correct thing to do, but I've enjoyed it. And I think when you see, for example, in the South Korea-Ghana game today, Ghana were clearly wasting time the last 15 minutes. The referee decided to add on 10 minutes. And that was the right thing to do in that moment for me.
Yeah. Obviously, when your team are behind and the opposition are wasting time, it's frustrating. So I'm not asking this position from like a total naivety, but do you think you can vocalize why time wasting is bad?
Well, it's against the rules of the game. It slows down the game. It's I don't think it's in the rules of football, but I think it's one of those things that's happened a lot and it's frustrating, and referees seem to have very little control over it. They're unable to speed
it
up.
It is in the rules. That's why you can book goalkeepers for taking too long over kicks and things.
Fair enough, but that never happens. It happens very rarely, always in the 80th minute. I've sat through many games at Spurs where Ben Foster's just done whatever he wanted to do.
From minute one as well.
From minute one, and then at the end of the game, you have 3 minutes, despite the fact that there's six substitutions have happened, and he's wasted 10 minutes overall.
And it's never a second yellow. They get one yellow, and that doesn't really affect their game because keepers very rarely ever get carded. So it's a complete non-thing. It's a total sort of gesture, I guess.
Yes.
I think... So we've spoken a lot on this podcast about like the enormous amount of football that top level players are playing. We've just spoken about Kane not wanting to be rested, but he's playing like 50 plus games a season, up to 60 with England, right? It's causing a lot of injuries. It's taking a toll not only on the player's health, but also as a byproduct of that, the product itself is lesser because the players are more fatigued. I also think it's fair to say that time wasting negatively affects the product as well. Like it's especially difficult for me personally to keep my attention when they just keep cutting away to other things because someone's wasting time. So I think that this is coming at a cost. I think so the average game of like Premier League football, the ball is in play for about 60 minutes, right? They're wasting half an hour of time, again, 5 minutes back of added time, right? It's a farce, as you're right to point out. And so this World Cup, the referees have decided they wanted to trial, or people above the referees, they wanted to trial something closer towards 90 minutes ball in time. That's a lot of football on top of a lot of football, right? So I think that this current way of doing things, there is a significant additional cost on the players, on fatigue. And I think that what you're getting in return is, for the most part, time wasting is utilized by the team who has sort of snuck into a winning position against the odds, right? So you talk about Ben Foster, right? So when West Brom get an early goal, they're wasting a lot of time, things like that. And so the main thing that the reduction or elimination of time wasting helps is enforcing sort of the dominance of dominant teams. So you're adding fatigue, and in return, you're decreasing the likelihood of upsets. And that is definitely not a worthwhile trade as far as I'm concerned. But I think there can definitely be a conversation about like 60 minute football, 60 minutes ball in play, stop clock type stuff. Obviously stop clock stuff, then maybe we get towards worries about adverts in the middle of games and things like that, which I hate the idea of, obviously, but I'm definitely worried about this current trade-off. I don't think this current trade-off is a good one.
I'm not too bothered about it. I mean, if there's time wasting going on, the players are getting a rest in the game anyway. There's 30 minutes. They're not even running for a full 90 minutes if there's 30 minutes being wasted. I think what this is doing is highlighting an issue that everybody knows is there. And I just think before you can go and do a radical change and change from a 90-minute game to a 60-minute game, you have to go through the processes of what can we do to change this. So I think if this is the first step in doing that kind of stop clock thing, then I'm all for it. It has made a couple of the games more exciting. As a football fan, it is a quite exciting moment when the fourth official holds up the board. It's like, ooh, what's it going to be?
Double
digits is great. There is so much time wasting. There's now 5 substitutes. Fatigue should be less of an issue. I think this is good. It's a wake-up call that you can't keep getting away with it. I think we will see as the tournament goes on, teams will stop making that kind of fifth substitute just to wind down the clock because they know what's going to happen. And you're right. The longer the game goes on, the more fatigue there is, the more chance of a team making a mistake. And if you're having to do a lot of defending in the 98th minute, it's more than likely going to be you that makes the mistake. So I do think teams will think more about it. But then even today, they're doing substitutes at 97 minutes, even though they know the time is going to keep added on. So I think this is a positive move that they're addressing time wasting, which for me has been really upsetting me over the last few years.
Yeah, and I think from the perspective of the paying public, the fans, and what they're getting for their money, I think it's right to have some focus on the amount of time the ball is in play. And, you know, seeing deliberate time wasting in the stadium is utterly infuriating. It's bad enough at home, but when you're in the stadium, it's utterly infuriating.
Yeah.
But I do take Nathan's point that there's a compromise there, that the product is lessened by it because more players... Yeah, because, you know, players' health is so carefully planned to the extent where they talk about the red zone and, you know, the players can literally play just that 90 minutes at that intensity, suddenly adding in another 10 minutes of that intensity or 15 because you've got 5 in the first half, 10 in the second half or whatever, might tip some players over the edge. So perhaps the solution...
But we're not talking about that. We're talking about players who are pretending to be injured. We're not talking about players actually getting injured. We're talking about players pretending they've got cramp when they haven't, or they've done something, they've rolled around and they're looking for something where they're in pain. I agree with you. Players' health is important, but all this time wasted is coming from players faking that they're actually sick.
But we'll end up with a bunch of muscle strains from the additional time, I imagine. And one solution to that could be an additional substitution window in stoppage time. Maybe that's one way of compromising and coming to some sort of middle ground.
Sure, but then I think that you are... like both additional subs and the elimination of time wasting as a sort of defensive mechanism are both things that, again, favour the richer teams, the more dominant squads, right? So I think you can compound things if you go in that direction. Yeah, definitely curious to see whether the time wasting decreases over the tournament, if we start to get sort of a larger sample and teams start to learn what that looks like. But at the moment, I'm worried about like missing the last train home from an evening game, you know?
That's true. The impact on the fan in the stadium, it does change things. And even the halftime beers, you go down and there's still 10 minutes of football you could miss. But it's true. Your train home as well is an issue. But I do think this is just the first step that FIFA are making to change the laws of the game into something where time wasting isn't a factor.
Yeah, I mean, if this has the effect of scaring teams into stopping the time wasting, then it will have effectively have done its job. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I think I'm old enough to remember when so before they changed the back pass rule, a goalkeeper used to be able to pick up the ball, drop it, run with it to the edge of the area, and then pick it up again.
Yes,
they used to be able to do that, but before the pass back rule came in, that they stopped that, so a goalkeeper could get the ball, and then if they put it on the floor, they had to kick it. They couldn't pick it back up again, and that was almost the kind of the little island hop before they went full all the way to not being able to pick up the ball.
But they could place it down, pass it to their centre back, and receive it back and pick it up again.
Which I used to do as a goalkeeper in 1990, because we were playing on big pitches and I couldn't kick that far. I would take a short goal kick, I would knock it left to my fullback, and then they would knock it to me further up, and I would scuttle to the top of my area, then pick it up again, and that would gain me 12-13 yards to be able to kick it further. And then as the rules changed, then I started to get into shit because then I couldn't pick it up anymore. But yeah, so I think this is just the first step in the change of the rules.
Definitely one to keep an eye on, and something I suspect we will come back to before too long.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Thank you.
We are once again partnered with Athletic Greens, so over to Bardi.
So I've been on my AG1 journey for quite some time, and I want to chat gut health, especially now as guts are in the news. Hey, Windy, did you hear about the Brazil team?
That they have a striker who plays better as a nine rather than out wide?
Yes, but that's not quite it. Brazil will come down with some nasty gut problems, I heard. But you know what looks after my gut, Windy?
Your AG1?
Yes. Every morning, I slip into my body ingredients with naturally occurring enzymes that bolster the digestive process and enhance nutrient absorption. The AG1 formula also contains immune-supporting mushrooms, but it's as tasty as a Richarlison overhead kick. My guts are roaring to go every morning, roaring like the indomitable lions of Cameroon, and not roaring with gas. Back to you, my lion of a host.
So Athletic Greens was created when the founder experienced a ton of gut health issues and ended up on a complicated supplement routine to recover, which cost him $100 a day, and the product supports better sleep quality and recovery. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/extrainch. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/extrainch to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Let's talk a little about some of the recent transfer links, because there have been a few popping up ahead of the January transfer window. So taking these in some sort of order, Andreas Skov Olsen, what do we think of him, Nathan?
So he was linked today or yesterday, I think, by a Belgian site or paper or something. So he's currently playing in the World Cup. He plays as sort of a wide forward for Denmark. He is Danish. And he is currently at Club Brugge, which is why kind of the Belgian site are reporting on it. So he used to be in Serie A at... Bologna? He used to be in Serie A, where he was sort of...
It was
of
Bologna,
a,
yes.
Okay, where he was a not very good winger forward. And there's two angry Danish people already, just on that sentence alone. and I think he's sort of okay for Denmark as well in that role. He also plays that role, the winger forward role, in European competition for Brugge. But domestically, he plays as a wingback, and it is the wingback role, which is why I think he should be of any interest to us. I recently added him to my right wingback list. I think that there is something there. A career winger transformed into a wingback because they, do a decent defensive job or up and down players, and a 50th percentile attacking winger is a 90th percentile attacking wingback kind of thought process. But if we're looking at him as someone who's going to be back up to Kulusevski, I think that's really bad.
So as a left-footed right-sided player, how do you feel about him playing right-sided wingback?
Yeah. That he plays right wingback, I think, almost entirely domestically for Brugge, and I think that's fine. He's good at that. I also think that with the way that Kulusevski plays, someone who moves inside is fine. So similar for a couple of other players I've got on my list, Dest, who likes playing on the left as well. Mm-hmm. Things like those are all good fits. Yeah, he's comfortable hugging the touchline or moving inside or whatever. I'm not too worried. You know, he's able to get the ball into the box in other means than outside foot crossing. I'd have to have a look and a think about what his outside foot crossing looks like, you know, maybe lay down the line. He can probably also maybe do a job at left wing back. I don't know if he's played there. I don't know if he's played there before. Probably.
Okay. Bardi, any thoughts on Skov Olsen? Did you catch him much for Bologna?
No thoughts on him.
Okay. Weston McKennie.
I didn't like him at Juventus, and I've not seen anything in this World Cup that makes me like him even more. I think he's all right. I don't think he's better than anything we already have. So I would avoid this. I know it would make our American listeners very happy, but he's just not very good. He gets up and down the pitch. That's about it.
Definitely gets up and down the pitch. We're linked with him just every window, but he seems to really, really like him. And he's a decent player. He offers a considerable goal threat from midfield. He's good defensively. He's great in the air, all over the pitch. He has a motor, but none of those things really suit our need. I mean, we don't have a goal-scoring midfielder, but...
We've got two, Nathan.
Yeah.
Sorry. Of course we do. Yeah, well, on that basis then, absolutely no need for Weston McKennie. A good player who does nothing for us, especially.
Rodrigo Becao.
I am confused and distressed by this link to a mid-table slugger who's good in the air and bad with the ball at his feet.
He's got Everton written all over him. He's not good.
The good news is that he can play both the central and right centre back roles, but he can play them not especially well.
So talk to me about his skill set or lack of.
He's really good in the air.
Okay. Is he Eric Dier?
He's more aggressive than Eric Dier. Imagine if Eric Dier tried to be really aggressive and just gave up a bunch of fouls, but also was like outstanding in the air. I should probably come up with it that Eric Dier is not a good starting point for that player. Who was the really tall guy at Southampton?
Oh, Jan Vestergaard.
Vestergaard. Yeah, Vestergaard was just always lunging in.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah, that doesn't sound much fun.
Did you see Eric Dier's video with Harry Kane when he was talking about Jukin Mate?
No.
Go check this out. Eric Dier, apparently, for the last, I don't know, 12 years, has been an enthusiast with it. And wherever he goes, he takes with him a massive bag of hot water, his herbs, his little pouch. And Kieran Trippier bought him like this kind of Mate super case that he carries around with him everywhere he goes. It was kind of very sweet.
Nice. Mm. Denzel Dumfries.
So we haven't actually been linked to Denzel Dumfries. What we've been linked to is... hang on a second. Let me double check what I'm about to say. Yes, okay. Inter Milan are reportedly interested in Emerson Royale. However, before they can offload Emerson Royale, they would need to sell Denzel Dumfries. Therefore, you've got a lot of quote tweets from Spurs fans saying, oh, I know how to solve this. We should buy Denzel Dumfries. Denzel Dumfries is a capable wingback, fullback, who people are aware of and hear about because he scores goals. So does Matt Doherty. And there are a lot of easy comparisons with Matt Doherty. I think they are remarkably similar players. And we have Matt Doherty, and we don't play Matt Doherty. And you don't want two players whose whole thing is arriving at the back post whilst being an okay up and down wing back in your squad for the same position, because then you've got no variety, nothing to change there. I think he's a really bad fit for us. He's a good player, but we have him already and we don't play him.
Unai Simon.
I like him. I like this guy. We were talking about goalkeepers before the World Cup started, and I was curious to see what was going to happen. And I really like him. I think I agree that perhaps his shot stopping isn't where it should be, but I think it's better than Raya, and I think it's better than Sanchez. So I think it's above those two guys. And I think he's probably on a level with his feet. I like him. I think he's Atletico Bilbao. He's got to be gettable. And I think he's good, man. I've enjoyed how he's played. He's made a couple of good saves, and he's been excellent passing out the back. I'm sold on him.
Bilbao charge outrageous prices historically. He statistically, his shot stopping peaked when he was like 21. He's been on a downward trajectory since he first arrived on the scene. He's sort of looking sort of about average now, or a little above average in total. Not really sure how to take that. And then obviously, yeah, his passing is good. Technically good, I mean, but like extremely high risk. as we have seen in the Spain-Germany match. You have any thoughts
twice.
On that?
He passed straight to Germany players twice.
I think... you got to admire how he was doing that. And also shout out to Onana, who got kicked out of the World Cup because he refused to boot it.
Hell yes.
That's who we should have signed. But I agree. It's high risk. Spain just play high risk, and Germany pressed really hard. And occasionally you will make a mistake like this. It does happen. It happens to Alisson. It happens to every top goalkeeper. It happens to every single player when they are pressed. So I'm okay with it. I can live with that. I can live with a mistake every now and then, rather than him just booting it out for throwing.
That's fair. Nathan, another player we were linked to, you...
Well, you don't want to hear my Unai Simon song?
Please sing your Unai Simon song.
Unai Simon, you're our number one. Go and play in goal, my friend.
Oh, my God. We can't sign him. We can't sign him. Christ.
Jesus.
So bad.
It's been in my head all day.
Nathan, another player we were linked to, you did actually produce a video on.
Simican.
Mohamed Simican, yes.
Have you watched that now? You put it in the running order.
I have watched half of it.
Okay. All right. I think we touched on it. I think it was in the running order by mistake. However, more recently than that, I did the Leeds analysis video and we forgot to talk about it. We referenced it multiple times in the previous podcast that we were going to talk about it later. And
yes,
it is now a week later. So let's talk about it now.
Really fun. I very much enjoyed this piece of analysis you did, which you did live on the Discord. So people could watch Nathan break down the game against Leeds. You'd kind of pre-prepared some sections that you wanted to focus on and let the game run between those, I guess. And you took questions as it went along. And it was really good fun.
Yeah, so this was an idea that we discussed before a little while back on the podcast that Jonathan wanted us to do. And yeah, it went really well. I felt really good about it. And I didn't bother editing it because it would have been an absolute nightmare to edit. So I've just left it as like a Twitch VOD-esque
yes.
experience is what I'm channeling there. We have used Twitch before for scouting things as well. I felt really good. I felt this went really well, and I'm interested to do a handful of more here and there. The thing is, it's just like there's not been that many brilliant games. I think maybe we could do this for Champions League opponents to get an idea of them. I'm really happy with that. If you haven't watched it, if you're already a subscriber and you haven't watched it, I strongly recommend you give it a watch. Maybe skip through it, maybe put it on two times or whatever. But I think this is a really good idea and I wanna do it some more again.
I found it really useful because you go to a game and you kind of get swept up in the emotion of it and everything else, and then you watch it kind of back on Match of the Day or highlights video or a 3-minute highlight video on YouTube, and you don't really get the ebb and flow of the game. So it was good to go back and watch it and see if my assumptions around Emerson and everything else, whether or not it was what actually happened.
I think it was one of Nathan's strongest pieces of analysis yet. I really, really enjoyed the style, the delivery. I enjoyed the fact that it was interactive and people could chip in, and Nathan was, you know, using people's comments to launch into some of the next points he made, which is really good fun. So let's end with a couple of questions. This is, we'll ask some Spurs-related questions because we haven't done much Spurs chat, really. I quite like this from a while back. Neil Meppam said, are we a good team or an okay team with a few very good players?
We are a good team. I think so. I think, we've gone into the reasons we're underperforming, but I think it will become apparent in the second half of the season that we are a good team. I think that we are more than... I mean, if you start working your way through the squads, your list of very good players gets too long pretty fast, I think.
I think that's a good shout. Yeah, like we've got good players in pretty much every area of the pitch. So you have to say we're a good team if that's the case. We've got some weak points. I think there are some obvious improvements and fairly straightforward upgrades that would make us a better team, but I do think we're good. I think we're at least top five in the Premier League good. I'd like to think we're top four in the Premier League. If Kulusevski makes a difference, I think he'll make to our starting 11.
I agree. We are a good team. I think at the moment, occasionally we're a little bit stuck in Conte's strange decision-making, but we're a good football team.
So this is from Oat, who says, what's the biggest concern for the second half of the season and what's the biggest thing to look forward to?
I think the biggest concern is what's going to happen post-World Cup. That's I don't know how the players are going to come back. So that's a worry thing. But I think the biggest thing to look forward to is a few players who've had their minds solely on the World Cup. Richarlison, Son, these guys, Romero. These guys have been really distracted by the World Cup. So I'm looking forward to them coming back and focused.
My concern right now is not improving the three areas that we desperately need to improve. Not improving our depth at centre back, not improving our depth behind Kulusevski, not improving at right wing back in some way. Keeper can probably wait, right? My concern is like how failing to do one or more of those will, because I just answered the previous question saying like I think we'll be good in the second half of the season. I think that it is very possible for us to go into January, get hit two of the three targets and be a much better, or not much better, but much more stable team, who are less easily disrupted by an injury here or there, or too many games in a week here or there. So my concern is like not realizing our potential, because I think our potential is really, really high. I think we saw a lot of our potential last season, and that's why we felt so frustrated this season. I think we can go back to that and maybe even better. I'm just worried about us stumbling over January and not making it happen.
Also, I would like to add, what's the biggest thing to look forward to? Champions League coming back against Milan. That's an incredible, incredible time.
Yeah, I think I generally feel pretty optimistic. I think Kulusevski being back is massive. I think he rejuvenates us. He's exciting to watch. He means that our style can work despite the issues with right wing back. But the biggest concern for me is Conte's apparent obsession with Emerson Royale. I don't blame Emerson Royale for this. I blame Conte for this. He's got other options and he's choosing not to use them. And, you know, it's leading to a pretty toxic environment for Emerson Royale, where he's literally being booed by sections of the home fans. And we're seeing the same weaknesses week after week. And it's a real problem. So, you know, switch that, either play one of the alternatives or sign a new right wing back. And suddenly I think we feel even more optimistic, but he hasn't shown a desire to do that yet, which I think is a genuine concern. But I do overall think the second half of the season, all being well with injuries post-World Cup, will be a lot stronger. And like Barney says, we've got a fantastic Champions League tie to look forward to. Hopefully an FA Cup run as well. That'll be nice. And yeah, finish the season strongly. You know, our players have been conserving a lot of energy by only turning up for one half of football a week. So let's finish the season on a high note.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nathan Aklar. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs. We love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.